Hello and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I am your guest host, Hannah Flohr. And today on the show, we're talking about a new program at the Anchorage Police Department where people who have experience with addiction do outreach to get people into treatment. Overdose deaths in the U.S. have been declining in the last couple of years, but Alaska is behind the curve. Addiction and substance misuse are a real issue in the state, and they overlap with other issues like homelessness and public safety and police violence. I report on homelessness in Anchorage, and there is a portion of the homeless population here that has been unhoused for years. And officials with the mayor's office say those people often need behavioral health care like addiction treatment. In covering the city's homeless response, I heard about a new program at the police department where people in recovery from substance use are doing outreach work to help those with addiction issues. I passed the story along to health reporter Rachel Cassandra since it's kind of more her wheelhouse. And she is here with me today to talk about the program. And the show is actually going to look a little different than usual. We'll be playing tape from her story. We'll be playing tape she didn't include in her story. So let us know if you like it and if you'd like to hear more like this. You can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Hannah. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So just a note, this is a pre-recorded show, so listeners are not going to be able to call in or email questions. So, Rachel, you recently reported this story, and you're also working on a national version of the story for NPR. And I mentioned that the topic is kind of more in your wheelhouse. That's why I passed it to you. What is it that you generally report on?
Yeah, totally. So I report on anything health and mental health statewide I can report on, but I have kind of a special interest in stories that center on people experiencing addiction. And I've also done a bunch of reporting lately on programs that use peers to help people in recovery. And we'll get a little more into that later, but I've just reported on how powerful it is to have someone who has experienced addiction helping you through that process if you're wanting to start it.
So tell me, what is this program? It's a peer support program through the Anchorage Police Department.
Yes. So this program is a pilot program. The Anchorage Police Department got some grant funding, so they'll be working on this for like a year and a half. And the police department has had what they call their HOPE team that does outreach in homeless encampments mostly. And so far, that's been a police officer and a social worker. And they've been doing some really great work. I know a little bit less about that, but I know, you know, you've reported a bit on it. Wesley's reported a bit on it. And now that team has a peer going out with them. So it's someone from True North Recovery is the partner for this program, and it's a peer in recovery who, yeah, again, is just able to help people walk through that process.
Okay, and so I mentioned at the top that today's Line One is going to look a little different. Usually we have a few guests in here. Often it's a live show and people can call in. Today, it's just you and I talking, and I know you have a bunch of tape that didn't make it into the story. So we're going to get some sort of behind the scenes. Who is it that we're going to be hearing from?
For the most part, we will be hearing from two peers. One is Josh Engel. And before they even had this pilot program, they already started working a little bit with peers. If we're talking about that phase of things, we'll call it like the pre-pilot. And that was, you know, a peer going out with the outreach team twice a week or just getting referrals from the police department to help people get into services. And so Josh Engel was the peer during that phase and also right when they started this program. We'll also hear from Adam Brown. He's the current full-time peer who's working with the force. And so he does outreach, but he also does a lot of follow-up when he'll get referrals from the police department, things like that. And we will hear from Lieutenant Brian Fuchs. He is the lieutenant who's in charge of this program. So he's working kind of like under the chief of police at APD running this program. And then we'll also hear from a couple of people in the field. We're not going to name them because we're trying to protect their privacy, but those are people that we'll hear when I went out with Josh when he was doing outreach. We'll hear from, you know, someone he talked to. And then we'll also hear from someone that Adam was bringing to a detox facility while I was shadowing him.
Okay, I want to hear some of this tape.
Just so you know, I got a lady with me. Her name's Rachel. She's from the media source. So I got a mic on me right now, just so you know. Okay. So what's up?
Oh, not much. We can chat for you. What are you doing?
Yeah? It's going to be tough. I'm not going to say, like you said, like, I'm not going to say, nope, can't have it. Like, I'm never going to say that when it comes to things, but it's going to be tough. as far as you guys going together to like a detox program?
So Josh and I were at an Anchorage encampment when I was recording that. We showed up with like donuts or muffins, something like that, some emergency supplies. And this was a couple Josh had already been in touch with, so he knew that they were interested in a detox program.
If you guys are both ready, both of you, I say let's do that. Like, let's set it up and so like it can be done at the same time, you know what I mean? And like, and then we can start working that process. It just won't be in the same building, bottom line. It's been a long time coming, right? It was about a year ago when we first met. You want some of these? Like emergency blankets or something? I got another one somewhere. Here. Okay. Well, is that what we want to do?
So in Josh's outreach work, you heard him offering an emergency blanket. Like, his main job is to get people into rehab and detox programs if they want to. But it's also just connecting people to resources and safety, however they define it. That's all part of the larger picture of getting people stable, because that also helps them be in a place where they could think about making a big change in their life, like going to detox or starting recovery. And so it was fall when we went out, and Josh was also thinking about winter coming when he was visiting the encampments.
I mean, you know it's coming. That white powdery stuff is coming.
I'm not worried about that.
I know you're not. Well, I know, but I swear, every single time we talk, like, almost there, almost there. I know you are, but...
I've been out with outreach workers in homeless encampments many times in my reporting, and that feels different. I want to say he almost feels a little pushier.
Yeah, so that was also something Lieutenant Fuchs talked about when I sat down with him at APD.
When you sit down and you have that conversation with them, it's a totally different ballgame to see them work, right? And their ability to relate to people that are in addiction. And they have this really unique ability to be as tough as they need to be based on the person they're dealing with, and as soft as they need to be, right? And they can go up and down this range where we really can't do that, because as soon as you get tough with somebody as a police officer, man, they shut down, right? And they don't want to talk anymore, because now, like, I'm going to go into handcuffs, I'm going to get arrested.
It's interesting. I almost feel like this program, it feels kind of like social work. And I'm curious, you know, I know it's grant funded, but still, it's a lot of effort, it's a lot of resources that the police department is putting into it. And do you have an idea why the police department is interested in this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So backing up a little bit, the current police chief appointed by Mayor LaFrance is Sean Case. And a big part of how he runs the force is trying to aim at fixing the root of the problem, not just doing these same kind of like arrest and release cycles over and over. And Hannah, this clip is from your interview with him.
You know, traditionally, when I grew up in law enforcement, there was kind of one answer to every problem: handcuffs. You know, if you committed a crime, we'd put handcuffs on you, we'd take you to jail, and that was kind of the simple solution. The problem is, what we've learned over the years is that's not going to fix everything. And we have some pretty significant underlying issues that I think we're all aware of.
So Lieutenant Fuchs is under John Case and in charge of this particular peer program. And he described a few reasons that a program like this makes sense for public safety and reducing crime, which are main goals of the police department.
So part of it is intercepting and doing the enforcement piece, keeping the dealers and the drugs from coming in the community. And we have units that do that work. But also there's the piece where it's like, let's work on the people that have these horrible addictions and let's help them break those addictions so that demand goes down, right? So we can attack it at both ends.
Kind of like what Sean Case was talking about, the lieutenant pointed out that you can't arrest your way out of every problem. That's just not always a solution, and sometimes it worsens things. So in the past, I asked the lieutenant kind of like how things would go normally if an officer was, you know, out on patrol, say, and they met up with someone who they knew could benefit from recovery. Like, what did that look like? And he shared this.
I have Bill Smith here, and he really needs to get into treatment. These are some of the behaviors that why we had contact with him. He's not violent, but he needs help. Well, Bill Smith's got to fill out 50 forms. He needs to go online. I'm like, I'm in a tent, like in Davis Park. Like, he can't do any of those things, right? So now you're just frustrating the officers, right? Because as much as people may not think this, the cops really want to help people.
those kinds of experiences, he said, you know, could prevent an officer from trying to do the same thing again because they don't want to, like, hit that barrier, disappoint someone. And overall, those kinds of things contribute to burnout, right? And so that's, like, kind of another silver lining of, like, that could happen from this program is you're reducing burnout because cops have another option besides either arresting people or just letting them sit in this place where they clearly need help, but they can't help them.
And you're talking about burnout with the police officers, but one of the things that I hear over and over and over again in reporting on homelessness is people tell me they're not actually going to help. They're just going to make me fill out those 50 forms and then I'm not going to get the help. And so I think that that is also a real impediment, that feeling of like there's nowhere to go. I just have to go through this process, but there's not going to be anything at the end of it. And it sounds like this peer support maybe helps them see that there's going to be something available to them more quickly.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about mental health care and especially immediate care, like something like a detox program, like we want all those programs to be really, we call it low barrier, where you can just walk in and get help. But in reality, like there are very few programs like that, even in the country. Like there's always all this red tape. So Josh on the peer support side told me a little bit about his frustrations with the addiction and recovery side of things. He called it a chasing your tail or toilet bowl effect.
You have this like problem that goes around and around and around, and it's like you get help, you get a little bit better, you discharge, you're back where you're at, it gets bad again, you go get help. Like, where do we interrupt that at? You know, I think a good starting point to interrupt that is when somebody is willing to get the help. And then you have to be willing and able to walk that all the way through.
So, you know, it sounds like one of the points of the program is getting people help with addiction, reducing demand for drugs. Are there other reasons the police department is interested in this program?
So, yeah, there's another big public safety component that the lieutenant mentioned when I talked to him.
The reality of this is that active addiction often leads to other crimes. 100%, whether it's theft, assault, rape, whatever. It's just, it leads to other crimes.
Yeah, when I was doing a little bit of research for this story, you know, I know that drugs and alcohol are part of a lot of crimes. And I was kind of surprised how high, like for common crimes in Alaska, drugs and alcohol are involved in about 60% of those.
Wow.
That's according to data from the Mental Health Trust Authority. So one function of this program is also to prevent that public safety ripple effect, like drugs and alcohol and addiction in a community, just
like it ripples out.
Yeah, it ripples out.
So it sounds like there are a bunch of reasons that this is great for the community. But I am curious how peers are actually getting people into the programs. You know, it's the tape that you were playing earlier of the man talking to the couple in the park. He had known them for a year and he was kind of pushing them and saying it's always we're almost ready. So like, how do they get past that? How do they get over the hurdle and get them into treatment?
Recovery, it can be a really, really long journey. You can't go to rehab for people or make them go into programs. And Adam Brown he's the peer who's full-time with the force right now. And he says, like, in order for his own sanity, he kind of tries to focus on making sure people can, like, recognize his vehicle, getting his number to anyone and everyone who might know someone who might be interested in recovery at some point and who might need help getting into a program.
So he's really playing the long game.
It is the long game. You'll hear from him a little bit kind of why that makes sense and how it impacts the structure of the program.
And that's an important part of it, too, is staying in contact and doing that. So that, you know, when that time comes, we're on it. You know, that moment of desperation, my sponsor equated it to being a window. It opens and closes really quick. And so you want to be able to jump on that opportunity as soon as possible.
So that window, like, that doesn't mean tomorrow. That doesn't mean next week. That means now. So later you'll hear a tape from when I went out with him, but at that point, he kind of dropped everything to drive someone to a detox program who didn't have a ride, because if you don't give someone a ride when they're ready, you might lose your window. And that could be weeks, months, a year, like, who knows?
So you're playing the long game, but it's not necessarily like this is going to come through in 2 years. It's like this could come through at any moment. So I have to be really, really paying attention and I have to be very, very patient until that moment.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things Adam said to me is like, he's kind of not been able to keep up with his paperwork for his new program. He has to do a lot of documentation because like when someone calls or texts him and says, I want to get into detox, he just drops everything and he goes, because that could completely change someone's life. And that opportunity might not be there Monday when he's next at work.
Hmm. How is he finding these people in the first place? When I'm reporting on homelessness, like it can be hard to just walk up to people and be like, hi, how you doing? How is he establishing who he is, getting to the point, you know, there's obviously he's putting a year of work into establish that trust, but like, how's he even finding the people he wants to trust him in the first place?
So he is doing outreach work. And what that means is that he shows up with an officer and a social worker and they go into the encampment. And I think it has been a big adjustment for him because before this, his job was working at True North, where he saw people who wanted to enter recovery, but they were coming into the facility asking for help. Super different. So now he's walking in encampments and introducing himself. I think the HOPE team has done a lot of work to establish trust in a lot of these places. A lot of that is that they're bringing people resources and they're not going in and arresting a bunch of people. The cop is there, but they have some leeway from APD to not necessarily arrest people. Like, this is sort of part of the greater goals of APD. So they have, yeah, just a little more flexibility. And so another piece I wanted to talk about a little bit is just when I talked to the lieutenant, he also talked about the potential this program has when they're expanding it because of the access that police have. So if you think about it, you know, if you're a police officer, like how many times you might interact with someone who needs help like this?
If you're on a call for service and you have this big event and let's say it's a domestic violence assault and there's multiple victims, whatever, right? Like there's no counselors going into that situation, right? There's no substance, there's no behavioral health folks going in there. Oh, but there are, they're mine, right? And they're in there at the tip of the spear. And now I've got peers that can go in there and immediately assess the situation and provide services. Like,
yeah, just to be clear, that tip of the spear idea that, you know, an officer could bring in a peer or get in touch with a peer, like that's not happening yet. Right now they're at the outreach phase of the program. So they're going out to encampments. They are getting some referrals. And I think they even talked to the health department recently, in case people at the health department come across people who might want help from a peer. But they're, you know, sort of this next phase, the lieutenant said they're starting to educate other kinds of police officers in the department about how peers could help, like what their, you know, powers are basically as a part of the team.
So overall, the goal is to have a team that can provide this service at the highest level for the department and really affect change with folks who are in active addiction to lessen the burden on the community. And when I mean the community, I mean not only the first responders, but the city, their neighbors, right? Their family, right? Their friends, their, you know, the person they meet on the sidewalk or the person they run into walking their dog on the street, right? Like having a life that is manageable versus being in active addiction, that's like night and day.
That's interesting. It really meshes with the reporting I did on the mobile crisis team, which is housed at the Anchorage Fire Department. And, you know, usually the fire department is responding to health crises, but they have this team that goes out for behavioral health crises as well. And what I understand is that really takes the pressure off of emergency rooms. And the team is then funneling those crises into care and they're working in conjunction with a bunch of different departments. So it sounds like the sort of holistic approach where people are working with different departments, they're working with different resources in making the sort of recovery more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, having people in crisis enough that they might want to go to an emergency room, like that's the most expensive kind of care possible. And it's also like not great for people, right? If you are wanting to detox from substance use, like it's so much better to go to a detox facility where that's all they do versus, you know, showing up at an emergency room, being in a hospital, like brightly lit hospital with like all this chaos and just getting sort of kind of the minimum amount of care to prevent serious health impacts.
Well, it is time to take a short break. You're listening to Line One, your health connection here on Alaska Public Media. I'm Hannah Flohr, and I'm here in the studio with Rachel Cassandra. And up next, we're going to get into more of the nitty-gritty about what the program looks like. And we'll also hear some recordings from the fields when Rachel Cassandra did her ride-along with the full peer team. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Hannah Flohr, and joining me today is health reporter Rachel Cassandra.
Hi.
So we've covered a lot of the why of this program, but I'm really curious to know more about what the program actually looks like. And I know we talked a little bit about you doing a ride-along with the peer support.
I did a ride-along with Adam Brown, who is the full-time peer that's working with the force. And so I said before, he's mostly doing outreach where he's going to encampments and talking with people. On the day that I did the ride-along with him, he was not doing outreach because he had so many referrals of people who are interested in treatment that he needed to catch up and just do that. So the day I met him, the first thing on his plate was he was planning to meet with an unhoused couple. We were heading to McDonald's so he could kind of meet with them. They were both interested in detox. And then we were kind of in the parking lot. He was texting them, trying to get in touch, and they weren't getting back to him.
The subscriber you are trying to reach is not available. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, it's Adam from True North Recovery. Been trying to reach you, but right now I have to drive somebody up to Wasilla. I will be back in a couple of hours, and I would love an opportunity to sit down and talk with you guys and make a plan so that you can change. Please give me a call back at your earliest convenience.
A lot of his job is just, like we said before, just staying in touch. You know, when someone's life is in crisis, when they have an active substance use disorder, when they're unhoused, like, their life's not predictable. There could be a lot of chaos. Like, one moment they're ready to go to detox, the next moment, like, he can't get in touch with them. That's, like, very normal. Later on, he found out that couple's phone had died, right? So, like, you don't have a home. You don't have an easy place to charge your phone. These are, like, lots of small things can kind of interfere with your progress.
Yeah, I have certainly found that in my reporting on homelessness. So what happens when he hits a dead end like that? It sounds like, you know, you're talking about the window, really wanting to jump on that window. The window was open for this couple. Then they have a dead phone. Did the window stay open? Was he able to, like, find them, follow up?
Yeah, I actually didn't check with him about that couple, so I'm not sure how that turned out. But he, you know, he said in his message, I've got to take someone to Wasilla to a detox center. That was him already pivoting to the next person on his list. So he always, you know, it seems like even though this program is new, he already always has way too much on his plate than he can handle. So he just, you know, goes to the next thing. So he got in touch with another guy who he had heard was, you know, ready to go to detox, someone he'd met before, even brought in to detox before, but the guy had left the program early.
I'm right around the corner then. I'll be there in literally 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Adam.
You got it, my man. I'll see you soon.
I'm just glad. On my way down.
I'm glad you called, brother.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Adam. I apologize for leaving early last time.
So, yeah, he was apologizing because the last time Adam brought him to detox, he left. You know, sometimes it takes a while to stick.
That's okay,
I'm
man.
I'm thankful that you're helping me again, though. And this time I'm going to make sure I stay.
Yeah,
I'm
man.
Not gonna
I mean,
leave this
time. Yeah, you know, just kind of figure out what thought process you're having, man, and talk to somebody about it. You know, look, man, I never stayed in a detox a day in my life, right? So, and you know, you and I have known each other for a while, man, and I will always continue to support you. You know,
I appreciate you. Yeah, I'm gonna try to go from detox to treatment this time. I'm gonna try to talk to the case managers out there and ask them if.
You could do a bed to bed.
You know, they can help me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's your best bet, man. Because if you leave detox and you go back to the same people, places, and things, your chances of success are very, very, very slim, you know?
Yeah. I'm tired of being on the streets and using. I'm going to try.
That's so interesting that Adam said he had never stayed in detox a day in his life. So he got sober, but it wasn't through one of these treatment programs.
Yes. He told me later how he got sober. It was in, like, abandoned building he was squatting in, and he just cold turkeyed it, which is really dangerous. It's not recommended. You can die. But that is how he did it. And he left detox programs. And I was also a little surprised because I was like, wouldn't you want to say like, you know, sometimes it takes a few times or like, you know, and not say like that never worked out for me. But I think that's a lot of when I'm with peers, like they just know so much that I don't know. And he's also done a lot of training. So, you know, he's really thinking about his impact and he shared a lot of what he was thinking about before this guy got on in his car. And we'll get to hear some of that tape later. But, you know, he's thinking about the particular things that are kind of interfering with this man's sobriety and kind of walked him through some of those.
In a really specific way.
Yes. So, yeah, he was especially concerned because, you know, he's known this man for a while. He's even brought him to detox before. And he doesn't really let people into his feelings, his emotions. And that is one big piece of recovery is you've got to kind of, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak to that. Really, but like it makes sense to me that it would be a big part of recovery is like so much of using substances, it's like medicating things in your life. I really see it as like kind of only being self-medicating in a way that's more harmful to your body than other ways you could do it. But there's stuff down there that you have to sort through. And if you don't do that, you know, are you ever really going to be able to be in recovery?
So I know that the peers are going out with a HOPE team, and part of the HOPE team includes a social worker. Tanya is on the HOPE team. She's a social worker. So like, what is it that the social worker is doing that's distinct from the peer? Why do we need both of those things?
So that's a good question. And we've talked about, you know, at this point, like a couple of things, including like the lieutenant flag that peers can kind of dial up the pressure, be a little, have a little bit of that like tough older brother or sister vibe, right? But Josh, who has been a peer support in this program, he talks about just how the lived experience that peers have makes them especially poised to help someone.
You know, from the 15 years of bad decisions that I made in my life and the lifestyle I lived, like I got a lot of experience and knowledge from that you only get from living that life, you know? And so, I mean, it, just to like the outreach stuff, like who better to do outreach and work with somebody that lives in a tent than somebody that used to live in a tent?
And, you know, Josh said there's a lot of people he's met doing outreach and that kind of thing who only feel comfortable talking to peers. Like he'll get stuff like they'll be like, well, you don't know what it's like. And he's like, actually, I do. And this is my story. And he'll also pull people kind of away from the officer. You know, people with substance use disorders have, at a minimum, like very complex relationships with police, like mm-hmm. because we criminalize drugs and criminalize like drinking in public spaces, say like when you have a full addiction, it changes your relationship with the substance so that in order to feel okay, you have to do that substance. So if I'm in active use, in order to feel okay that day, I have to, you know, use this substance and that substance is illegal, right? So there's a lot of people who don't feel comfortable with an officer and maybe even a social worker.
Mm-hmm. I can see how the peer is also kind of proof that it would work, proof that it's possible to get sober.
Yes, exactly. They're irrefutable proof that like you can live a more sober or sober life and be okay.
Which Absolutely. Maybe is something that's kind of hard to believe if you are in active addiction.
Exactly. I am sure that it just feels like an insurmountable mountain.
And this program is just for, this grant-funded pilot program is just for folks who are unhoused in encampments. Do you know if there are plans to broaden out? Because I, you know, there are people with active addiction who are housed.
Yeah, I do know mostly they're focused on the encampment outreach, but I do know that they've started going to things like health fairs and that kind of thing. Adam started going to that. I don't know if they have more plans for outreach. I do know they have plans that pretty soon they're going to be bringing on another full-time peer. And we'll get to that like a little bit later about their ideas about expansion.
Okay. You know, Adam is keeping track of all of these people that he's had contact with, trying to follow up with them. I'm assuming so then people have his number. They're like passing his number on to other people. Like, is there a bit of a word of mouth situation going on? What's happening?
Yeah, he passes out his number to everyone, often is giving people his cards multiple times because they may lose them, that kind of thing. But that's a huge piece of his work. He wants everybody to know his number and even, like, you know, is hoping that as he gets more integrated in the force, like, other people can give it out too, and they can give it in a low pressure way that says, like, hey, we're just giving everyone these cards today. This is a peer who has experience going through the recovery process, who can talk to people and help them navigate it. Like, can you take it? And if you know anyone who's facing that, and then you're not putting someone on the spot being like, you look like you have a drug problem. So, right. Yeah.
Right.
You know, but at least that seed gets planted, you know, and they have place or a person to call and go to for the help when they decide that they want it. Right.
So I'm thinking about what Lieutenant Fuchs said about, you know, the 50 forms that the person in the tent in Davis Park would have to fill out. And maybe this program is trying to sort of circumvent some of that, but I know there are still a lot of complicated barriers. There's a lot to navigate when you're homeless, when you have addiction. So I'm curious, is that sort of complication, the bureaucratic complication, the finding beds, the finding programs, is all of that something that the peers are also helping people with?
Yes, absolutely. It's navigating all that red tape.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, someone who doesn't have a substance use disorder, that's going to be a pain for them and it would be difficult to navigate. But when you have an active substance use disorder, like, your brain's working differently and you have all of a sudden this daily immediate task. Again, you need to find this thing and spend more money than you have to get this thing to make you feel well that day. It's just, yeah, it's sometimes insurmountable.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, yes, in Alaska, like a lot of places, like, we don't have enough resources for people with substance use disorders. We're making a lot of progress in that department. But still, like Adam says, a lot of what his job is just keeping track of, oh, what resources are available today if this person wants to go today.
Yeah, we had two female beds this morning, and they just had a walk-in, right, for withdrawal management. So that ultimately affects my game plan, you know. Plus, they have this other male that's down here, which will fill us up.
So part of it is just that math in their head of, like, who has beds and where. And a lot of what they're doing, which, you know, the lieutenant also talked about how great this is developing relationships with all these places so that they can get someone in quickly. And Adam, he told me a story about what he called his first major success when he was working in a crisis department that kind of illustrates that point.
I met this young man. He was homeless for about 5 years, living in a campsite. And the only thing he really needed help with was food. So I picked him up and I took him grocery shopping and I got him a few things. And the reason why I got him a few things is because I want him to call back. And we got together twice a week. And then, you know, second time I met with him, I said, hey, man, do you have anything to cook any of the stuff in? And he goes, no. I said, well, let's get you a pot, a pan, fork, a knife, a plate, and a cup. So that's what we did. And then during that time and that travel time, we had conversations. It took about a month. And then he realized, he said, you know, I've been thinking about my life and how it's gone and all the things. And, you know, I think I do have a problem and I don't want to be homeless. I think I want to give it a try. So I got him in a detox. He went through our treatment facility, went through our outpatient facility, and has his own apartment, and he's doing great. Right? And that all started just by getting somebody some food and doing a little bit of motivational interviewing. Right?
That feels like the kind of experience that Adam probably goes back to when he's having a tough time following up with people and maybe getting a little frustrated. It seems like that kind of success probably really keep him going. So it sounds like there's a lot that peers can offer that others can't. And I'm wondering then, why even have the police officers along when sometimes there can be such a complicated relationship with police officers and maybe make it harder to build that trust?
Yeah, I thought a lot about that question. You know, and I said before, like, Adam's job changed tremendously when he, you know, was brought on by the police force. He used to have people walk into his space. And so that outreach work is totally new for him. How does it feel to go out with Ruth?
I would prefer it because she carries a pistol. I've got a bulletproof vest back there, and I don't know. You know, a lot of violence happened in these camps, you know. And I carry a weapon on me at all times. But unfortunately, I'm not allowed to carry a weapon in this position. and I feel very unsafe approaching people I don't know in a situation. So I will not go out to campsites without an officer present for that reason.
That absolutely makes sense. Rachel, do we know what the results are so far? Do we know whether this is succeeding?
Yeah, so they are tracking a lot of data for this, you know, that includes like how many times they've intersected with people, how many times they've intersected with people before that person gets into recovery. They're starting to track all that, and I'll share the data that they have so far in a bit. But they also shared a lot of just anecdotes about with me about how the program's going. This program is not completely unique, but there are not many programs out there like it. And
wait, you know, when you say out there, do you mean in Alaska, nationwide?
Nationwide, there aren't many. I'm still figuring that out. I'll have to figure it out for the national version of this story. It looks like the force in Tempe, Arizona is doing something similar to this. They've been doing it for a while, like 2020 or 2022. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are not a lot of peers working directly with police departments.
Wow. Wow. How did APD... Do you know what the backstory is, how they decided to create this program then? Was it...
They worked a little bit with peers. They brought them on to help people get into programs who needed resources. And they kind of did like that pre-pilot time was they had them on a couple of times a week. It was supposed to be really temporary. They ended up extending that for a while. Ended up, I think it was like over about 8 months that they tried that out. And they have a grant writer at APD who, yeah, just... worked really hard to get a grant for this because they were like, I think we want to try this out, but we don't have the funding for it. It's an expensive program. Like, they're having a full-time peer on as a contract worker. There's going to be more. But yeah, they got that funding. So they're trying it out. And I mean, everyone I talked to in this, the lieutenant, the peers, they're so excited about this program. It's really trying to do things differently. And I think, you know, is trying to get at the root of some really deep community rifts that have been going for a long time. And we will talk about that more in detail, like sort of towards the end of the program. But a lot of the goals that they have for this program are not super measurable. So they do have some things. They can count how many people get into rehab. But what they can't count is like, what are people's, you know, attitudes towards police officers? What are, you know, people who are experiencing homelessness, you know, is this changing their relationship? Do they feel more like they can access help if they need it? Those kinds of things. But Josh did share an anecdote along those lines.
And last year when we were still doing it in that 8 months, you know, like we went to a camp and a guy tried to shoo us out and like three other individuals that were staying in that camp, I mean, let loose on them. We're just like multiple other people stood up and it's like, absolutely not. They're here to help us and, you know, like they're cool. Like they're not, that's not a problem that they're here. And like, it was just really cool to see that, like, you're getting like some traction and buy-in from some of these individuals. And so, I mean, I think that would be like one of the biggest hopes is that you can continue to move in that direction and stop this, like us versus them type of mentality.
Yeah. And the lieutenant also kind of talked about that period that led to them applying for a grant to fund the program more full time.
We saw in the first couple months that they were on board with us, I think they put 16 people into treatment, which I was like, oh my God, like that's amazing, right? I mean, that is because as much as people sometimes don't want to admit it, like police officers are solution minded, right? Like we absolutely don't want to have to go out and big contact with the same person in the same situation, having the same problems every single day. Like that is not something that we want to do. So by identifying and finding ways that we can create solutions for the community, that's what we really get paid to do. And so this to me was like, wow.
That's 16 people is a lot. That's kind of incredible. You said you had more data. What else do you have?
Okay, so these are numbers the lieutenant sent me for the first 4 months of the program, which was still, they were kind of gearing up for a while and then starting. So they made contact with over 300 people. Most of those people were offered treatment to 60, and 60 people were actually admitted to treatment. Hmm. 40 got emergency housing, and then I told you they also give out Narcan to people.
And the likelihood is not every person will have success, but that still seems like those numbers still seem quite high.
Yeah, 60 people into treatment. I mean, if you think about how hard it is just to like, follow up with that couple, for example, like, you know, some of it's logistical, like, is their phone working? You know, can they spend the time that day to meet? But also, like, are they really ready? And then jumping on them at that time. But I think, I imagine that for people who are, who might be kind of on the fence, like having a someone who's been through it before, just really holding their hand, being kind of both a caseworker, but also like knowing how difficult that path is and being evidence that it can work. Like, I imagine that it can, you know, sway people who might not have gone to programs otherwise.
So you had said something about how Adam is kind of having a hard time keeping up with his paperwork because he's getting so many calls and he has so many people he's keeping track of. And that makes me, well, I know this is a pilot program right now, but do you have a sense as to whether or not there are plans to expand? Is there a way to sort of, I know it's grant funded right now, is there a way to sort of fold the program into the police department? What's the future of the program look like?
Yes, I think all of those, they want more peers. I know they're bringing on another, well, when I talked to the lieutenant, he was like, imminently, we're going to bring on another full-time peer.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Josh kind of talked about what he wants to see and this whole vision. They have a vision that's bigger than this pilot program. They hope to run this program. They hope the data supports it. They hope they can get more funding. They hope this is just a partnership that can move forward.
I mean, right now, like, Adam's like drinking from a fire hose, ultimately. We kind of implemented it and turned it loose. And then, you know, and I need 10 more Adams, ultimately. I need multiple people that, you know, are available 7 days a week. And right now we operate Monday through Thursday, you know, with, he works a 4-10 schedule. And it's like, so what about Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? What about, you know, 24 hours a day or at least until like 11 or midnight, you know?
Like, this is, again, thinking about that window. And like, are most people's windows going to be Monday through Thursday for those business hours? Like, probably not. And yeah, so I think expand the peers is their hope. I don't know if they're going to change the hours when they bring on someone, but one of the reasons the lieutenant said it was great to work with True North is because he was like, they're really ambitious about their reach. You know, they really want to reach people. You know, in some ways it feels a little bit like they're evangelists. Like, they have found this way of life that completely transformed everything for them. Almost all the people at every level at True North are peers of some kind, including like physicians and the person who works at the front desk. So, you know, they're really serious about their mission and they want to reach as many people as possible. The other piece of the expansion, the lieutenant says, you know, now they're moving to educating other types of police officers about how to use peers as resources, even if the peers aren't doing the outreach themselves.
An officer can call, you know, one of our True North peers on duty and be like, I'm here at this location. I've got Jane Smith here. This is the history of why we're here with Jane Smith. This is what led us to our contact with Jane Smith. She's not arrested. She wants help. What can you, and she's ready to go to treatment. Boom. They can go over, pick her up. They can do an intake right there on the street.
I'm hearing a lot of positivity about this program. Sounds like it's people are really excited about it. Which makes me wonder, you said earlier that this is a pretty unusual program. Why is it unusual? Why aren't there more programs like this around the country? Why didn't APD start it sooner? Like, what's keeping police departments from doing this kind of work?
Yeah, so one piece of it is definitely money. You know, they had to secure this big chunk of funding to be able to do this. And there's definitely also this kind of culture clash between the culture of a police department and the culture of those with substance use disorders. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But also, when I talk to Lieutenant Fuchs, he says some of it comes down to just, you know, if you want to work for a police department, you need to pass these really intensive criminal background checks.
Oh.
A lot of our peers, a lot of peers in general, right, based on the lifestyle that they've chosen in their past, sometimes have criminal, some criminal background, and that can be a challenge for the those programs, both you know, just based on getting access and passing a background. And there are some ways that, you know, chiefs of police can assume some risk to allow some of those folks, depending on the severity of the background check, gives them some ability to waive some of those requirements.
I do want to play a little bit of the tape of when I was out with Adam and getting back to the man that he called. He picked him up at his uncle's place in Anchorage while I was, you know, there shadowing him.
I'm happy, you know, to be able to go back to detox, because I've been there a few different times, you know, and every time I came back into the streets, you know, from relapsing, it's been rough. And this time around, you know, it's been just as rough as every time I did before. You know, I'm grateful, you know, for the help that I received from, you know, people like, you know, yourself and Adam. Everybody on board that's on the team that's trying to help, you know, people, you know, better themselves. And God willing, get off these streets and, you know, do something with their lives, you know, that's more productive and, you know, meaningful. And trying to help give us a purpose, you know.
You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection, here on Alaska Public Media. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the program. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Hannah Flohr, and I'm here in studio talking with health reporter Rachel Cassandra. And again, this is a different format than usual. Let us know if you like it or if you have any thoughts about it by emailing lineone@alaskapublic.org. And a reminder, this is a pre-recorded show, so we are not taking phone calls or emails. So, Rachel, you had mentioned to me in the newsroom a little bit ago that you have seen this program sort of healing bigger community relationships. And will you talk a little bit more about that?
We've talked a few times about how inherently using substances means you're breaking the law. There are a lot of people with active substance use disorders who really have negative associations with cops. Maybe they've been arrested for stuff related to that or other things, you know, related to the life that they're living. And a lot of times people have learned to fear cops and have a lot of apprehension, at least, you know. And then on the other side of it, like, a lot of times police officers have negative associations with people who are actively using substances because they're coming in, they're arresting them, you know. These are people who are, kind of constantly in crisis until they work through their things. And so, you know, if we were making, like, the cartoon version of this, like, these would be enemy arch enemy style. Yeah. And that's too simple, and it's not fair to, like, the complex humans that are in those roles. But that is one thing I think this program could start healing, is that kind of rift between those roles.
Mm.
And I mean that both in, like, inside the department and with people in recovery, but also eventually kind of rippling out into the community.
You know, that makes sense to me that it would start to heal things because they're seeing different sides of things. What did you see in your reporting in terms of that healing?
Yeah, so I think it's been really powerful for cops to work side by side with someone who's been through this, and also for peers to be working with cops. Adam talked with me really frankly about his feelings about that.
So I went to a meeting with, I don't know, it was probably 20 officers in the room. And, you know, I don't know if he was a sergeant or a lieutenant. I don't know what he was, but he was leading the group, right? And I shared my story, and he goes, "How's it feel being in a room full of cops?" And I said, "Well, I'll tell you, my last engagement with officers was me and my younger brother, and we didn't do anything wrong. There was misidentification. So my brother and I are 10 feet apart. We get out of the van, hands in the back of the head, walk backwards. I watch my brother, the back of his head, get kicked into the ground, and then a gun put at mine. This is in New York, mind you. And the officer said, 'Make a move. I dare you. I'd love to blow your head off.'"
I imagine in that moment, he would never have thought he would be working with police officers.
Absolutely.
Did he talk about how it felt to be in that room with a bunch of police officers here in Anchorage?
Oh, yeah. He still has all those feelings. But, you know, Ruth, the officer who he's been working with on the HOPE team, he feels very safe with her. And so she was there. And so I think that was kind of helping him. And it's just a couple of months into this new job for him. But I think, you know, his aim is to work on his feelings about officers. And I think, you know, that will happen naturally as he spends more time with a variety of officers.
Does he talk about that with the officers? Do they understand what his experience is like?
Yeah, and I think they have a sense of humor about it, too. Yeah. Some of them do, anyway.
Now, that is a very, very, very long time ago. Right? And now, mind you, a lot of interactions with police officers as an addict, right? Like, it's, how do I put it? It's never, usually ends well, right? And that's something that we're trying to change.
And I think that's also a nod to this idea that they want to create this path forward so that cops can direct people to help. And it's not, you know, the only interactions aren't just if you're being arrested or investigated.
Mm-hmm. What about police officers? Did you talk to them about what their experience was like spending time with someone who had been in active addiction?
Yes, absolutely. When I sat down with the lieutenant at APD headquarters, he talked about that.
We generally make contact with people at the lowest point in their lives, and they're making very bad decisions, and we have to manage that process. And that's generally not a positive experience for them because they're not in a positive place.
But he says working with peers in this program, seeing someone on the other side of that bad time is really transformative.
And so having folks that have come through that, peers that have come through that challenge and just made such a positive impact on themselves and people around them and taken that mantle up and now are giving back to that community, that is impactful. And so having those folks around our junior officers and our officers, any of our officers, our commanders or whoever, right? That's impactful. And it's impressive.
I'm curious whether you think that there is going to be sort of a similar impact community-wide, sort of changing the way that people think about both addiction and police. Is it possible it'll ripple outward?
Yeah, I think it is already rippling out a bit. You know, we heard a little bit from Josh about how, you know, people started to shoo them out from an encampment, and then other people were like, no, they're here to help. And Josh really, he says he really appreciates working alongside those officers.
Being like shoulder to shoulder and like walking alongside like law enforcement it's not just like patrol, like it's these two individuals that have like dedicated who even knows how many hours to like serving this specific population and like approaching it as like the team aspect. It again, like I think it just continues to shift that narrative of nobody wants to help me, police are just out to get me, you know, and it really shows this like united front of like there's plenty of help out here.
So there's a lot of anti-police culture out there, and there's a lot of culture out there that's dismissive of the struggles of people who have substance use disorders. And like blames people for those issues and for not having like the willpower to change or something like that. When even though all the research points to this functions a lot more like a brain disease than it does a social problem of some kind. Like people can't just stop. It's not just that easy. There's the physical addiction component, but then there are all these other things. Your brain has totally changed when, you know, you're dealing with active addiction. And Adam says one of his goals with all this is just kind of to humanize people with addiction.
I hate to say this, but I can look at a person and tell you what drug they're on because I've lived it. I've been all around it. Yeah, I've known it all my life. You know, and so I'm able to pick it out. And when you're able to pick out somebody who's been ravished by, let's say, methamphetamines, there's pick marks all over their body, right? People look at them as just less than nothing, scum, right? A hindrance on the community. They don't look at them as a person that needs help, that's wounded, that needs healing. And that's what we're trying to change, is the approach and the conversation that's had with an individual that's still suffering, to let them know that it's okay. You know, we've been in those shoes. We can help you.
Joss also says, like, that this cross-group healing I'm talking about, this community healing, is one of his favorite pieces of this whole project.
There's a lot of good people out there that are homeless. There's a lot of good people out there that wear a badge, you know what I mean? And the fact that at some point in time, like, we forgot and we had to, like, look at everybody as, like, a human.
Yeah, and so really on both sides, when I was talking to people, like, Josh, Adam, the lieutenant, they just have a lot of mutual respect for each other, and it's this really big passion project for them. They all gave off these vibes that they could get really tough as needed in their positions. I think it's required for all of their jobs, but they also just kind of, like, in their own ways, like, gushed about the kind of the people on the other side of this cultural line, gushed with, like, mutual adoration for their project partners. And yeah, that was really neat to see. And Josh says that he really respects, you know, the force for being open to working alongside, you know, peers in recovery.
We are blessed to have, like, an agency like APD that's open-minded and willing to, like, ultimately work side by side with somebody that you used to chase around, right? Like, I used to be your problem. And
yeah, it sounds like people are really enthusiastic about it. And I can see that you're sitting across from me and you're smiling too. And I'm curious what your experience was reporting on it. How do you feel about the program?
Yeah, I think it feels, I'm, like, kind of personally invested in this. What this is really, like, a culture change. I came from a cop family, grew up in New Jersey. My grandfather was chief of police, my great uncle, et cetera, et cetera. And I spend my days with people with substance use disorders, you know, and I think there's something that's really just heartwarming around just knowing, like, there doesn't have to be this dividing line like this.
Yeah, it can feel so good to report on something improving.
Yes.
Because most of the time you're not.
So many times we're like, this is a terrible problem. This is a terrible problem. Yeah. And that's really important too. But yeah, it does feel nice to kind of focus on a bright spot.
That was reporter Rachel Cassandra, who also produced today's show. And thank you so much to our tech producer and audio engineer, Ammon Svensson. I'm Hannah Flohr. You've been listening to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.